Welcome to the Vancouver Island Music Fest podcast. I'm Dan McLennan, and this is Girly Man.
I know I have no right. I know I have no say. I know that you're not thinking about me anymore anyway. So what was it we were? In that thin piece of time. I was never yours, and you were never mine, and I don't really care, I'm fine. I wanted you to know, before you up and go, back to your pretty boys, back to your pretty.
My name is Tylan Greenstein, but you can call me Ty. I am one quarter of the folk pop quartet Girly Man, and I'm one of the three singers. Three of us sing three-part harmonies in the band, and I also play a bunch of instruments, guitar, percussion, mandolin, or whatever we need in the song, basically. Doris and I actually grew up together. We met when we were 8 years old, and we started singing together very young. So we developed these tight harmonies together, and we met Nate, the third singer, in college, and just started singing a lot of three-part harmonies. Really what we would do is sit around singing Indigo Girls songs, but there's only two parts in that, so Nate would make up the third part. And, you know, we actually went our separate ways after college. Nate had a solo career, and Doris and I had a duo career, but we combined forces in about 2001, late 2001, and we realized that the three-part blend was just more powerful than anything that we were doing on our own, and it's really a huge part of what we do. We did it in college because it was fun, and then we sort of had these ideas of, you know, what our music careers were going to look like, and we came back to it because it was fun. And actually, our first rehearsal was scheduled for September 11th, 2001. And, you know, we were in New York at the time, and obviously we didn't have the rehearsal. But when we kind of picked ourselves up from the ashes of that day, we realized, you know what, nothing really matters except that we enjoy ourselves and, you know, make the music we want to make. So that's really how we got our start and how we came back together to just do something joyous.
Now, some people might have taken that as a bad omen, but you've managed to build on that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think life is kind of full of things that you can take as bad omens, but you can also see them as opportunities to, I don't know, create something beautiful or, you know, find hope. And that's just what we did and what we still do.
Someone asleep in my own bed, at home in my own head, well versed, well fed. Now I'm alone, just a dog in a dog bed. No one alive here to tell me that I'm not dead. No one to turn to and say goodnight. Hey. Now, Mama, I'm trying.
of us have slightly different influences, but mine were certainly, you know, harmony groups of the 60s, Simon and Garfunkel, the Mamas and the Papas, you know, the Beatles, in addition to just stuff that was playing around my house when I was a kid, like Van Morrison. And my dad's a bluegrass musician, so I grew up listening to a lot of bluegrass, so I feel like that kind of makes it in there. And I know Doris and Nate and JJ all have, they share some of those influences, and they all have others as well. I mean, Nate listened to heavy metal for a while. So, yeah, I think we all have kind of taken all of that and somehow put it into the band.
How does the Girly Man creative process work? How do you put these different influences together?
Well, we mostly start our songs separately, and then sometimes we bring them together for collaborations, especially if we're having trouble or we feel like, you know, the song needs another dimension, then we'll start co-writing. And that happens a fair amount. And then in terms of arranging the song, the harmonies happen really organically, really intuitively. We'll just basically be sitting in a room together, and we've been doing this for a really long time, so we all usually have a similar idea of where the song should go. Or sometimes not. I mean, sometimes it's totally out in left field, but our policy is to try every idea. And so we just kind of go along until we strike on something that feels really good to everybody. And we do all that without, you know, writing the music down or anything like that. But we do record everything we do. So when we hit the thing that really sounds right, then we've got it on tape and we can kind of go back and learn it.
I hope it comes where you are. I've seen it in the morning star. I've seen a chance to say amen. Just let go and start again. There's something there still holds my eye. There's nothing left for me to write. No reason to fight or even ask why.
The heart of Girly Man is those incredible three-part harmonies. Can you describe for me what it feels like to be within it while it's happening in that creative process?
Gosh, it's definitely a hard experience to put into words, but it's a very loving experience. I mean, you know, Doris and Nate and JJ are three of my closest friends, and I've known Nate and Doris for, gosh, decades. And so, you know, there's always a personal aspect to it where I just feel great love for them. But I also feel like in some way it's just a gestalt. You know, it just kind of is more than the sum of its parts, and it lifts all of us up. There's really no other feeling like it. And actually, some people may know that about a year ago, Doris was diagnosed with leukemia. And she's doing really well. Her cancer's in remission right now, which is just such a huge relief for all of us. But there was a time when we really didn't know if we'd be able to continue doing this. And when I thought about never being able to sing those three-part harmonies with Doris and Nate again, it just felt like that in itself was just an unspeakable loss. You know, so it's a very special thing. It's really unique, and I feel incredibly lucky to be able to do that with those guys. I mean, they're both such amazing musicians, and it's such an intuitive thing that we all do together. It's very special.
Back then we had to be cool, but nobody taught me the rules, so I just wrote it all down on the inside of my fast food paper. hurts before I learned about brakes. Around and around those cul-de-sac lanes, teens rolling by in their giant green cars, driving like me, kissing like stars. You were throwing your shoes right up over the wire. You were building those Singer toy castle empires, melting your crayons over tables of flame.
Can you talk to me about Supernova, the new album?
You know, I would say a lot of that record is about the past year and dealing with Doris's illness and, you know, how we all kind of felt in the wake of it and trying to cope with it. And not just that, but other, you know, big changes that have been going on for all of us. I mean, I don't know about you, but pretty much everyone I know is going through a lot of change right now. It just seems to be in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And so this album is really an autobiography of this time for us. It's been a really, really hard, you know, but we've had an incredible amount of support from the fans. And I think it's just been a really amazing journey, not just for Doris, but for all of us. And so I just think you can't really separate this project from that experience. In particular. And I really feel like the songs are true to what we actually went through as a band.
I hear celebration. I hear resilience. I hear, in some cases, defiance. Is that part of the group feel when you're working on something like this?
Yeah. I mean, it's when it comes down to issues of life and death, you know, it's, you really have a choice. It's, you can really, you can be defeated by it, or you can really explore it and be curious about it and see what's there. And I think for all of us, you know, there was really that temptation to just be kind of swallowed by this experience. And especially in the beginning, you know, when somebody you know is diagnosed with a life-threatening illness like that, it's just, it's very tempting to just think, gosh, everything's over. You know, this is just an end. But I think what became more relevant for us and more interesting to us was really, you know, plumbing all those feelings. And there's a lot of subtlety in there, you know, so I feel like a lot of that made it into the record. There's actually one line from the song Supernova that Nate wrote. Actually, he wrote it before all of that happened, which is really weird. But the line is, if you and I are all that's left in a universe sad and bereft, should I smile and say it's for the best? Or should I shout?
So if you and I are all that's left in a universe sad and bereft, well, should I smile and say it's for the best? Or should
I think about that line a lot, I do feel like there has been defiance, like this is not going to beat us. But maybe that's the second thing that rises up in a situation like that is defiance. You know, but then you just kind of let it change you and you see what's on the other side. And I think that, you know, although we're probably not 100% through the woods, that we are in some ways on the other side of that experience now. And I'm just happy to be able to share honestly with people what that has been like.
It's cliched, of course, but through challenge and adversity, we create something more. Do you have that feel about Supernova?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I know that probably is a really big cliche, but I think cliches are cliches for a reason. In some ways, you take things for granted until you can't anymore. And that's what has happened for us. You know, we're not taking things for granted anymore. And everything feels very magnified in a way. We're feeling like a lot is changing for us as a band, and there's kind of new frontiers for us, although we're really not sure what that's going to be. It just feels like we've come through something, and now it's time for us to kind of step on into the next thing. You know, we do have a lot going on with the new CD, and we're sort of open to whatever's out there for us.
How did it come to pass that you are coming to our Vancouver Island Music Fest?
Well, we were invited, and we were thrilled to be invited, and we pretty much immediately said yes. First of all, because it seems like a really wonderful festival, and we've never been to Vancouver Island, and just seemed like a really unique opportunity. So we're all really, really excited for it. Usually that's the place that I find all the new music I'm listening to, is just by playing festivals and hearing what's out there. So I'm very excited about that.
So gee, I guess anyone could have been me, staring at my reflection, wanting just a little bit of relief from my self-deception. There's no more I can run, this is how it's done. You just start.
Tylan Greenstein and Girly Man on the Vancouver Island Music Fest podcast. Much of the music festival's magic stems from the army of more than 1,000 volunteers who make it all possible, and they've all got stories to tell. Just ask Mary White. She's co-coordinator of the festival host crew.
I arrived for my 2 o'clock shift on a Friday afternoon a little bit early, and the folks on my crew are all abuzz because Arlo Guthrie is staying at the Anko, and it happens to be his birthday. So I said, well, let's give him a party. And so we started thinking about it. Okay, who would go get the cake? You know, what would we do? And gathering musicians. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. We better make sure he'll come. So I found out what room he was in. And I went up and knocked on his door. And he answers the door, and he's on his cell phone. So I wait politely. And he just motions me to speak. So I said, Mr. Guthrie, we were hoping you would come down to the hospitality room about 3 o'clock. And he just looks at me and says, why? And I said, well, we heard it was a special occasion. And then the light goes on in his eyes, and he goes, ah, okay, yeah. So very excitedly, I go back, and I tell Michael Rycraft, gather all the musicians. And I tell my supervisor, okay, you can go get a cake. And we set up the room, and we're... in less than an hour, we're all ready for him to throw him just a little birthday party. So all the musicians start filtering in, and some bring their instruments, like Tim Postgate and Jane Bonnet. And then we look out and we see Arlo Guthrie coming down. He comes to the hospitality room and we break out into song. We sing him happy birthday. And I'm serving cake and people are chatting and milling about and just having a really great time. And more musicians are coming. And so I see a group come in their jeans and cowboy boots and cowboy hats. And so I'm like, oh, it's Los Misioneros del Norte. And I said, come on in, have some cake. There's lots of cake. It's Arlo Guthrie's birthday. And they go off, and I think, oh, they must be just settling into their room and all. Well, they come back in their full gear and all their instruments, and they serenade Arlo for his birthday. And we just had a really great time. And it was fun. It was impromptu. It was a great way to start the festival.
Festival host crew coordinator Mary White. If you're interested, click on Get Involved on the Music Fest website. The volunteer application process has changed for this year. Thanks for listening to the Vancouver Island Music Fest podcast. I'm Dan McLennan. And thanks to Helen Austin and Todd Butler for taking us out.
We can sit together and watch the show. Oh, in any weather, we'll watch the show here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest.